Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 11th of August, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk to Wayne Ward about the blessing of the biscuit. We'll also talk to Carol Shriver and Gene Wilder from Homespun Mercantile and guest artist metalsmith Roger Williams about this weekend's farmer's market. We'll talk to Becca Parks about women's hockey being organized in Juneau. We'll also get news and views about local art during Arts Up with guest Nancy DeCherney. That music and more today at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, cloudy skies with scattered showers, low temperatures around 48 degrees with light winds. Friday, showers are likely with high temperatures around 55 degrees and light winds. Forecast for Saturday looks like cloudy skies with high temperatures around 59 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he's actively considering whether to legalize commercial gaming in his state. That would mean more competition for the Native nations, which rely on casino revenues. North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein reports.
Cuomo said Tuesday with five Native-owned casinos and slots at racetracks, New Yorkers should, quote, come to grips with traditional casinos.
You have gaming in the state. And by the way, you have gaming in neighboring states.
Commercial, non-native gaming could require an amendment to the state constitution, which could take years. But Native nations, including the Oneidas, Senecas, and Mohawks, rely on their current competitive advantage in gaming to make millions of dollars. The Oneida Nation said in a press release that New York should keep working with Native nations to expand gaming. But Seneca Nation President Robert Porter says the writing's on the wall to move beyond casinos.
We can't stay static. We have to keep evolving. And for me, it's diversifying into other things.
Porter envisions manufacturing, business incubators, and a Seneca Nation education system. And he's leading a bid to take ownership of a massive hydro dam that flooded Seneca lands 50 years ago. For National Native News, I'm David Summerstein in Canton, New York.
In Alaska, the subsistence litigation of Athabascan elder Katie John was back in court recently in Anchorage. Lori Townsend has more.
Katie John's first case went to the U.S. Supreme Court and established that Congress intended through Title VIII of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA, to protect fish and game, including navigable waters of Alaska. After the rulemaking in that decision, the state of Alaska asked an en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit to review the case. The decision in favor of John was reaffirmed. The state's latest challenge contends the regulations expanded federal authority to waters beyond what Congress intended. Heather Kendall Miller is the Native American Rights Fund attorney who has argued the case for Katie John. Kendall Miller says the regulations don't go far enough.
The regulations were limited to just those waters within the conservation boundaries, but should have extended to those waters in between.
Kendall Miller argued because the regulations limit the scope of the federal government's jurisdiction to the conservation unit boundaries, it does not identify and extend authority over the additional waters required for migrating fish to ensure healthy populations that will support subsistence.
Most villages aren't located inside the conservation system units, and therefore the federal rule doesn't protect most subsistence fishing. And that cannot be what Congress intended when it passed Title VIII of ANILCA to protect subsistence fishing.
Kendall Miller says it could be 4 months or more before the Ninth Circuit makes a decision, but she says even after the justices rule in the case, it may not be the end of the litigation.
Katie John is now 96 years old. She's been litigating for over 20 years, all with the goal of trying to protect subsistence fishing, which is only 1% of the overall fishery. And until we have a management program in place that does so, I think litigation will continue.
State attorneys declined comment for this story. For National Native News, I'm Lori Townsend in Anchorage.
During this week in 1971, a trust acquisition was issued for the Pechanga Indian Reservation. It was established in the 1800s, and several trust acquisitions increased the size over time. The reservation, containing more than 6,000 acres, is located northeast of San Diego, California. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Anderson, Miller, and Munson. Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.
In the hills of Tennessee, set beneath the hickory tree, there's an ornery rifle shooting mountaineer. Oh, he loves the mountain feud, and he also loves good food, and when he goes home to supper, you will hear. Oh, pass the biscuits for Randy, I'm just as hungry as sin. Pass the biscuits for Randy, give me some sop to sop them in. Since 9 o'clock, I've been sitting on a rock, a-shooting everyone in sight. I shot the coys and a dozen Martin boys. Shooting gives a man an appetite. Oh, pass the biscuits, Brandy. Pass them and tell me goodbye. They're so heavy, Brandy. I feel like I'm a-gonna die. Then he heard the rifle crack, and a bullet hit the shack, and another broke the dishes on the shelf. So he grabbed his trusty gun, 'cause the battle had begun, and he knew that he must then protect himself. Oh, pass the biscuits for Randy, I'm gonna load up my gun. I'll use your biscuits for bullets, I'll put them varmints on the run. He poured a ton of black powder in his gun, rammed the biscuits into place. He took good aim, oh my goodness, what a shame. Bang, the gun exploded in his face. Pass the bandage, Brandy, I know that I'm gonna die. Darn your biscuits, Brandy, I knew they'd get me by and by.
Spike Jones and the Wacky Wackians, or the Big the Dirty Dozen brand, who knows what they were. 308 in your tune to KTOO News in Juneau. Here in the studio with me is Wayne Ward, here to talk about the blessing of the biscuit, which happens this Sunday. Wayne, thank you very much for being on the station today.
Thank you.
So what's all this about biscuits?
Well, I've always had a passion for biscuits. I grew up on biscuits. In fact, we had biscuits just about every morning. There were 8 of us at the table, and my mother, you'd get up about 5:30 in the morning and make up a pan of biscuits and throw them into the oven and have us all up at the table by 6. And so hot biscuits were coming out of the oven. And so it was 8 of us at the table, and there's only one rule at the table, and that was to leave 1 foot on the floor at all times. And we would eat those biscuits, and then by that time she was bringing out a second pan. And there was a rule, too, as well. No biscuit could sit on the table for more than 15 minutes, because my mother thought, well, no one wants it, so she'd throw them out into the backyard, but none of them ever hit the ground. We had two big farm dogs out back, and they caught the biscuits like outfielders. So, yeah, so I grew up on biscuits.
Is it in Oklahoma?
Yeah, in Oklahoma, right.
What makes them different, I mean, special to you, other than just family memories?
Well, it's true. I mean, the family members, memories are special to me. I guess I was always searching for a better biscuit, because biscuits can be so plain and unexciting, so I guess my pursuit of the perfect biscuit, and I don't think I've found it, but I think I've certainly improved on biscuits. And
you're organizing the blessing of the biscuit this Sunday from 11 o'clock until noon o'clock at the Telephone Hill area. What are you going to be doing at the blessing of the biscuit?
Well, it's hard to describe, because I'm not certain what the event's going to turn into necessarily, but it's somewhere between public comedy and just a gracious offering of good biscuits and gravy and knowing what they should taste like. So the crowd will get biscuits and gravy, I hope. I only have the ingredients for about 500 people, so get there early.
This started at Costa's Diner also here in town?
Yeah, it started at Costa's. My wife would not let me order biscuits and gravy in restaurants. And I went over to Costa's by myself, Colette's, and ate her biscuits and gravy. And I asked her after I ate them, I said, "Could I make your biscuits and gravy?" And she looked at me like I was crazy. She didn't know me that well. And so for, I don't know, over 2 years, maybe 3 years, I made biscuits and gravy over at Costa's. I didn't charge her anything. It was just my passion to make biscuits and gravy.
So what's more important, the biscuits or the gravy, or is it like asking which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Well, that's true. You know, I interview people that eat them. Some think that it's the best biscuit they've ever eaten. One guy who didn't like biscuits and gravy, who actually ate two portions in front of me, said that it wasn't the biscuit, it was the gravy. So, you know, and I don't know. I'm not certain. I know that the biscuits are moist. They're interesting because they have a texture on the outside that's interesting as well. And I kind of learned from the French that texture is important as taste.
Before we went on the air, you talked about your greatest challenge was in Paris itself, making biscuits.
Yeah, I think Paris was the biggest challenge. Being in a kitchen with six Frenchmen looking over your shoulder, criticizing your every move, you know, as to how you were making the biscuits, because they weren't certain what biscuits and gravy was. So I finally got them to the table, and I just knew it was going to be a disaster, because nobody can be more negative about bad food than the French. But they all looked up and they said, "These are good biscuits and gravy."
Is there something you want to share, like your recipe for biscuits?
You know, that's difficult, and we may not have time for the program. The ingredients, it should always be buttermilk. I used cooking oil, vegetable oil, to coat both sides of it, because I think it leaves a better appealing on the palate than, let's say, cutting lard in does. It also allows the biscuit to rise higher and fluffier if you're not cutting lard into it as well. And a lot of people, you know, enjoy the fact that they're vegetarian biscuits, so vegetarians can eat them. But anyway, it's the ingredients. You start to cook them in the bottom of the oven, and you move them to the top later on. Never just set a pan of biscuits in an oven and let it cook. It tends to suck all the moisture out. So just little things make a good biscuit.
I'm talking to Wayne Ward, who's organizing the blessing of the biscuit this Sunday from 11 a.m. till noon in the Telephone Hill area. You've also got an outfit that you're going to be wearing.
Oh, yeah, I made a giant biscuit hat. It's about 4 feet across, about 2 feet thick, and it barely fits on the balcony with me, because I'm going to do the ceremony off the balcony down to the top of the first parking lot. or the people will be gathered in the bottom of the first parking lot. So we'll see how it goes. If I don't knock the biscuit hat off, because it's say the deck's not that large.
What is it? What's involved in the ceremony?
What's involved in the ceremony? It's a little bit loose as well. I wanna be able to bless the crowd by sprinkling gravy on them from the top there, or symbolically on the front of the gravy, and just bless the entire town and the entire congregation of true believers in the one true biscuit.
You sound pretty emotional about this.
Well, yeah, I've just always been passionate about biscuits. I'm disappointed oftentimes in other biscuits that I taste, and sometimes I'm disappointed in my own if I fail. But most of the time, people are very delighted with the biscuits, and I've learned a lot about biscuits and gravy, and who likes biscuits and gravy as well. I was surprised that more women, when I was at the restaurant, ate biscuits and gravy than men did, and maybe I shouldn't have been surprised that a lot of joggers eat biscuits and gravy, you know, when they came by in the morning.
What about young people versus old people? Or should they
older
people?
Young people versus old people.
Older people.
Yeah, I would say that probably the middle-aged people probably eat more than the other groups, because they're not quite into worrying about cholesterol too much. Not seeing the end of their life, and the younger people have never really been introduced to good biscuits and gravy, so it's always kind of strange to them, so they won't try it. If you can get them to try it, though, I mean, they're loyal.
It kind of harkens back to a simpler time.
It does. Biscuits are very simple. I mean, they've always been that way, and you can forgive a bad biscuit so easily. You know, I see it happen all the time. Bad biscuits are served, and well, it's warm, fresh bread, and you thank the server, you know, for it. But biscuits are actually more than that, and gravy is more than that as well. Gravy is a very fine sauce. If it's anything short of a fine sauce, then what you've got, you might as well have Elmer's paste, you know, across the biscuit, so that's important as well. The gravy and the biscuit have a very important relationship to each other.
And you say you've collected enough materials for several hundred biscuits?
Yeah, just in case. Colette Costa is going to be involved with the ceremony, and she thinks that I'm, you know, by just thinking that a dozen or 20 people will be there is probably wrong. She thinks that several hundred will be there, but that creates all kinds of other problems. So I'm just hoping for a few dozen people there. But if several hundred show up, then I can get about 70 biscuits out of the oven every 20 minutes. So we should be able to feed everybody that might come there, the biscuits and gravy.
So you invite people just, I guess, park in the parking garage downtown and then come up to the yellow house at the top of the hill?
Yeah, I think that works best, is to park in the parking garage. And I don't know, I haven't checked with the city, but someone told me that the parking was free on the weekends. I don't know if that's true. I think you'd want to check with the city first.
Would be a good shot in the arm for the city's budget anyway, if nothing
it
else.
It would be a great shot in the arm. I'd probably get an award and then ran out of town on a rail.
Wayne Ward, thank you very much for coming down to the station and talking about the blessing of the biscuits. Happening this Sunday from 11 a.m. till noon on the Telephone Hill area, just adjacent to the top of the parking garage. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I can't think of anything, Jeff. Thank you.
Have you ever heard of a wish sandwich? A whiff sandwich is the kind of a sandwich where you have two slices of bread and you wish you had some meat. Ball, ball, ball. Here, on a head, 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 the other day I had a ricochet biscuit. A ricochet biscuit is the kind of a biscuit that's supposed to bounce back off the wall into your mouth. If it don't bounce back, you go hungry. Bow, bow, bow. The other day, I had a cool water sandwich and a Sunday go to meat and bun. Bow, bow, bow. What do you want for nothing? Rubber biscuit? Bow, bow.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 11th of August, 2011. It's the birthday of the fiction writer André Debus II, born in Lake Charles, Louisiana, 1936. Came from a Cajun-Irish Catholic family. Went to college, studied English, journalism, joined the military, served for 6 years, became a captain, married, had 4 children, and then pursued his real passion, which was writing fiction. He went to the Iowa Writers' Workshop. He was very happy there in Iowa City with his family. Published his first novel, The Lieutenant. Got a job teaching in New England. He was a popular professor, and his books of fiction were well received. But as his career took off, his family fell apart. And that's the story that his son, the novelist André Debus III, told in a recent memoir, Townie, came out this year, how his father, André II, left his wife and 4 children for a beautiful young student, never looked back. Meanwhile, his ex-wife and the 4 children were living a life of poverty in mill towns of Massachusetts. The elder André would show up once a week to take his kids out to eat, but seemed oblivious to how hard their lives were compared to his own. And then late on a summer night in 1986, the father, André II, stopped to help a couple of young people who had gotten into an accident on the road. He had just gotten out of his car when another vehicle swerved off the road and hit him. One of his legs was amputated. The other never recovered, so he was confined to a wheelchair. His wife left him within a year. He lived alone in a house out in the country on a steep hill. And his sons, including André III, came to rescue him. André III had a best-selling novel, House of Sand and Fog, in 1999, and soon after that his father died of a heart attack. André Debus II, who wrote, "The writer who endures and keeps working will finally know that writing the book was something hard and glorious, for at the desk a writer must try to be free of prejudice, meanness of spirit, pettiness and hatred, strive to be a better human being than the writer normally is, and to do this through concentration on a single word and then another and another. This is splendid work, as worthy and demanding as any, and the will and resilience to do it are good for the writer's soul. If the work is not published or is published for little money and less public attention, it remains a spiritual, mental, and physical achievement. And if in public it is the widow's mite, it is also, like the widow, more blessed. Here's a poem by Louise Bogan, The Dragonfly. You are made of almost nothing, but of enough to be great eyes and diaphanous double bands, to be ceaseless movement, unending hunger, grappling love. Link between water and air, earth repels you, light touches you only to shift into iridescence upon your body and wings. Twice born predator, you split into the heat, swift beyond calculation or capture. You dart into the shadow which consumes you. You rocket into the day. But at last, when the wind flattens the grasses, for you the design and purpose stop, and you fall with the other husks of summer. The Dragonfly by Louise Bogan, from The Blue Estuaries, published by Ferris Strauss and Giroux, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly editor's podcast at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tonight on 360 North, it's Rain Country Reflections at 8, followed at 8:30 by the Oregon Field Guide. Then join Ann Sechrist and her guest, Susan Marshall, and learn about Alaska's heating assistance program. That's at 9 on AARP Alaska. At 10, get a lesson in New England maritime history, the first of four documentaries on the subject from the other coast. All tonight on 360 North.
Time is 3:27, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. We're our next guests are here from Homespun Mercantile to talk about the farmers market coming up this weekend. Carol Schreiber and also Michelle Donahue, and on the telephone with us from Gustavus is Roger Williams. Thank you very much for coming on the station, everybody.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And thanks for being on here with us, Roger.
Thank you, Jeff.
So first of all, Michelle and Carol, could you tell me about the Homespun Mercantile, please?
Sure. Gene Wilder, Carol Shriver, and I started the Mercantile back in November of 2009. It's an artist consignment shop. We have all local handcrafted goods from over 80 artists, most are from Juneau and from around Alaska also. We have all sorts of items that make wonderful gifts. So if you haven't been into the shop, you should come by. We're in the Airport Shopping Center, right next to Curves and Martha's Flowers.
Lots of different artworks, 80 artists. What kind of artwork is represented?
Boy, we have just a wide range. We have stained glass. We have knit and crocheted items, jewelry and accessories, hand-woven rugs, wood items, just a big, broad range.
And the farmer's market coming up this weekend. It happens on the second Saturday of every month. Is that true?
Yes. We started in July, and we'll have another one next month, second Saturdays.
What makes them special?
Well, we have 28 vendors, which is 50% more than last month. So we're looking at every month getting a little bit more and more. We have produce, and we have jewelry. We have crocheted items and copper flame pins. We have photography. We have a lady doing massage. We have big mics there to provide lunches, so you can come and have lunch and browse around. We have breads and jellies and just lots of things, hair feathers and shimmers and just everything. It's just a fun place to come and see your friends and get something to eat and walk around and just do some shopping.
Yeah, we want to make it a good community activity that everybody can come and be social.
And if somebody's an artist and wants to get involved in the Homespun Mercantile, how can they do that?
They can just contact the shop, swing by and talk to one of us, or give us a call at 523-5667.
Would you say there's anything that typifies the artwork that's shown there?
Well, it's very typical Southeast Alaska. If you want to get a good Alaska gift, just come on in. And it's just homey and well done, very quality work. It's beautiful things. And it's just fun to come because it's kind of like going to the public market without the crowds.
And on the phone with us from Gustavus, Alaska, is Roger Williams, who's a metalsmith, and he's going to be having his work shown this weekend at the Homestead Mercantile's Farmer's Market. Roger, thank you for being on the air with us today.
Yes, thank you, Jeff.
So tell me what a metalsmith is, if you could, please.
A metalsmith is just a general worker in metal. I use it in terms of art metal, but it's also used industrially. But generally, if you use the term metalsmith, you refer to someone who is making art metal. Jewelry, but usually with an emphasis on metal rather than gems and stones.
How did you get started being a metalsmith?
Well, it's a very long story to try to shorten it.
Go ahead. We've got time.
Okay. I came from a welding background. My father had a welding supply store, and so I had the opportunity to play around with different torches and welding rods. I started out, I think the first thing I did was I found a piece of scrap brass and I started hammering it and heating it and making it into a bracelet. And one thing led to another, and I had my father teach me how to weld, and I was mostly fascinated with gas welding. And about the same time, an uncle from Vermont visited who was the son of a blacksmith and was getting back into blacksmithing, and he had a book called The Art of Blacksmithing, and I read it, and I was sold out. I wanted to be a blacksmith. This was in the early 70s, and blacksmiths were just about leaving the scene in our area of Indiana, but there was also the beginning of a resurgence back in the early 70s, you know, the kind of the back-to-the-land thing. So anyway, I wanted to be a blacksmith, and did that for a time, but eventually started branching into other metals. First copper, making, copper lanterns and candlesticks and what have you. And when I moved to Alaska in 1980, I met a man who had a jewelry store in downtown Juneau, and I would visit him sometimes at night. I was working downtown at night, and I saw him putting together gold nugget jewelry with a little torch, and I said, you know, I probably could do that. And he said, you probably could. And he was happy to teach me, and I worked for him. So I got into gold and then eventually branched into silver, and now I'm back to copper and iron.
What do you have a favorite metal? Is it copper?
It's one of my favorite. I had to think what is my favorite metal, but copper is one of them. Yes, definitely. I like silver too, and I just like a lot of different metals.
What kind of things are you making these days?
You know, lately, for the last several years, I've concentrated on spoons and ladles, and coffee measures, which are basically just miniature ladles. I got making them, and I found that people buy them for either collections or to use, and it's just kind of worked in well with the type of tools I have, and that's what I've been doing lately. I'll make wedding rings still or candle holders, but basically it's spoons and ladles.
So tell me a little bit about your process, if you could, please. Do you sit around and find a piece of metal and then hit it until it looks like a spoon?
That's how I started, which is kind of an interesting thing. At one point, I was somewhere in remote Alaska, and all I had was a source of heat and an anvil, and I melted a bar of silver and just started beating it into something, and it started to look like a spoon, and so I continued. And it's interesting that when I was done, it was very similar to the Clinkett's potlatch spoon. And I thought, now that's interesting. Using the same kind of simple tools, I came up with something very similar to what they did. Then my wife and I were on the Alaska ferry once, back in the 80s, I guess, or 90s, I can't remember. And we bought a souvenir spoon made out of pewter, and the bowl part of it looked like a coin. And so at that point, I started making spoons using coins as the bowl. But anyway, to answer your question, I use a lot of metal that I, like old pipe that I find. I like to use salvage material if I can. And, yes, I heat it. I don't do any casting at this point. I have cast some, but basically I forge and hand fabricate metals.
Cool. So a lot of found objects is what you make your work out of these days?
You'll have to repeat that.
You use a lot of found objects in your work these days?
Yes. Well, at least a lot of metals, you know, that I find, like from the scrapyard and or the national park was redoing a fire system and had just hundreds of pounds of copper pipe that they donated to me, and I'm still using that. I'll split the pipe open and cut pieces out of it and things like that.
I'm on the phone with Roger Williams from Gustavus. He's having a show of work at the Homespun Mercantile Farmers Market this weekend. Also in the studio are Michelle Donahue and Carol Schreiber. Michelle or Carol, do you have any questions for Roger?
No, but I did want to say that Roger is our featured artist at the market this weekend, and we are featuring his items at 10% off in our shop, so definitely come see those.
Roger, what are the tools for a metalsmith?
The basic tools are anvils and things that are similar to anvils, which we call stakes. They're forms that you hammer metal to shape it. And, of course, the hammers. I have, I don't know how many different hammers, 30 maybe. And torches and forge-type heating devices to, heat the metal. Almost anything I do has to be heated. Another feature of what I do is because I'm from a welding background, I use a lot of a technique called silver brazing. So I join almost everything I do with silver, using a torch. So I would say a torch, an anvil, the hammers are my most basic tools. I also have a rolling mill. It's a hand operated tool by which I can reduce the thicknesses of metal and wires and things like that.
It seems to me that once you start hammering away, people in Gustavus could hear you from miles away.
I don't know about miles, but they can hear me at times.
How's your hearing?
It's getting worse.
Do you wear hearing protection?
I just started, but I think I may be too late.
I'm talking to Roger Williams, who's the featured artist at the Homespun Mercantile this Saturday, the second Saturday of the month. Also in the studio, Michelle Donahue and Carol Schreiber. Anything anybody would like to ask before we close down the interview for today?
We just want to invite everyone to come out on Saturday. We're in the Airport Shopping Center. The Farmers and Crafters Market starts at 10 a.m., so get there early for the best selection.
Definitely. We'll look forward to seeing everybody there.
All right, Roger, thank you for being on here with us today.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
the metal music of Bob Brosman, King of the Ukulele, and also the National Steel Guitar. Time is 3:40, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are Becca Parks and Katie Spielberger here to talk about women's hockey, which is going to be organized soon.
Yes, and it's the same league that's been going on for years, and JAHA, the Juneau Adult Hockey Association registration, just opened up, and you can find that online on the JAHA website. But we're doing something a little bit special this year to try to get some more women in Juneau out to join the league and start playing. We set up a women's clinic, and it'll be on Sunday, August 28th. We're encouraging women to come out at 4 o'clock p.m. to try on gear, and we're asking veteran hockey players out there to loan their gear and come help get some new people set up. Because I know for myself, when I started playing, when I got to town, and Katie's here to talk about her experience, it's just been a great way to try something new, to get in shape, to do something really fun and meet a lot of new people in town.
Will there be ice then?
There will be ice. The rink opens really soon. I forget that.
Official, I believe it opens
day.
On Monday on the 15th,
oh, there
if
you
I'm
go.
Not wrong.
Just around the corner.
Very excited about that.
Katie, what drew you to hockey?
Well, I guess I had enough friends who played hockey that I finally reached the point where I needed to play. I'd liked ice skating a lot in the past, and I'd always had in the back of my mind, oh, I should try hockey sometime. And finally, I had enough people who were persuading me that I really should try hockey. It was time to go. So sometimes all you need is just a little push, and I think that's one thing that this event that's being organized is hoping to do, is just give people that initial impetus to get out there on the ice and try something. For me, it really was baptism by fire or by ice. I went in with no previous knowledge of the sport. I had never seen an entire hockey game before I set foot on the ice for our first game. And I think it was, a month or so later before I actually watched an entire hockey game, not playing it. It's definitely welcoming to beginners who have little knowledge of the sport.
And the great thing is you're never the only beginner out there. Every year we usually get a good crew of people who've never skated, who've never played hockey, who've never seen a hockey game, that just come out because they want to try something new, and they're welcomed into the league just like veteran hockey players that are going to go out and be the high scorers on their team.
In what ways are men's and women's hockey different or similar?
In Juneau, they're incredibly similar. We also have four co-ed leagues, an A through D tier for JAHA, and then one league just for women. And there's no checking. But that's the same in the co-ed tiers. At least I've played in co-ed D. And
for people who don't know, what is checking?
Checking is when you run into each other. Most basic definition that I'm going to give it. That'll show people that I don't play that much hockey. But it's, I think, the major way that people get hurt. So we have really low injuries. It's a very, very safe sport. It's easy on the knees. It's great for those of us that may have played contact sports when we were younger to deal with the injuries that we acquired playing those sports and do something that just is a little bit easier on us.
And this clinic is coming up August what?
It's August 28th, and we're trying to give people a lot of time to plan for it. We're asking people to come out at 4 p.m., and the other important aspect is we're asking women players in town or men that have gear that'll fit us to bring down gear for people to just borrow for the day so that you don't have to go and invest that $200, $300 it takes to get yourself suited up. You can just show up. We'll have gear for you. We'll help you, show you how to put everything on, and then get you out on the ice and just make that a really fun hour to try it out and see if it's something that you want to put some more time into.
And then the league itself, when it gets going up and running, how often do you play?
We usually have about one or two games a week. It's usually one game a week. And they're in the evening. Times vary. It'll be anywhere from 6 o'clock p.m. to they do go as late as 10:30, 10:45 p.m. They tried it. JAHA's been really good about limiting the number of really late games. And I know a lot of parents like that because most of the games are going to be after you put kids to bed, and then you can have a sitter there, but you don't miss bedtime. You can run off to the rink and play a game and get in some fun and exercise for yourself still.
Those games do end pretty late and pretty early as well.
We don't do any early games. The adult league is only at night, so that's a huge plus for those of us that don't like mornings.
Is there a fee for the clinic?
There's a $5 fee for the clinic, and that's just to help us cover ice costs. So hopefully that won't be a barrier for anyone. If it is, then just give us a call, and we'll figure something out.
About how much money does it cost to get in gear for hockey?
Gear, if you go to Play It Again Sports and buy a fair amount of used stuff, I got mine for about $250.
Yeah, and I also would recommend asking around to friends who maybe have played in the past. I spent even less on my gear because I had a friend who had played in the past and wasn't playing anymore, so was able to pick that up. I think hockey has and continues to have enough of a following in Juneau that if you ask around, you can probably find some used gear out there, too. Check bulletin boards at the rink and whatnot.
And a phone number for people who call?
For now, we'll just give them my number. Oh.
Kind of gets you all choked up just thinking about hockey, doesn't it?
It's a very emotional sport for me. It's area code 917-902-0358.
Thank you very much for coming down, Becca Parks and Katie Spielberger. Anything you'd like to add before that I might have forgotten to ask?
I would just encourage anyone who has even the slightest interest in hockey to get out there and try out the sport. It's really it's invigorating. It's exciting. You meet this wide range of people. And, I mean, for me, it made last winter the most fun winter I've ever had in Juneau, no lie. And I think hockey had a lot to do with that.
And I'll give an email contact, too, if people just want to ask some questions. It's rparks@jedc.org. You can reach me there, and we'll just get back to you. Let you know more about the event and more about how to get involved with the league.
And Katie and Becca, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter Kenyon, NPR News.
NPR foreign correspondent Peter Kenyon is coming home to Juneau from Istanbul on August 18th. Peter began his public radio career in Petersburg and Juneau, and you can tune in for a special live Q&A session with Peter at 3:30 on KTOO News, followed by his talk about current events in North Africa at 5 at the Jack. Sponsored by the Juneau World Affairs Council, KTOO, and Alaska Longline Company. That's August 18th, admission free, starting at 5.
Support comes from listeners like you and from the Juneau Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juneau Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Time is 9:347, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We're in the studio talking. In the background is Nancy DeCherney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. Nancy, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
So what's going on?
Boy, there's a few things. You've been hearing some of them already. Let's see. We've got still have some openings in the Explorers Clubs. There's tomorrow they're going out to the glacier. So if you're looking for something for kids to do, give them a call. It's Salmon Derby weekend.
That's the City Museum?
That's at the City Museum, yep. You know, we should just talk about the calendar because it recently changed. You can now get all of your information from the Juneau Arts Council Gmail account. You can go to our, it's the same calendar that you're using, and people can subscribe to it, and they can send information by sending things to JuneauArtsCouncil@gmail.com. So if you go onto the new, brand new and improved K2 website, you'll see this calendar. Anyway, that's where all this stuff comes from. So, okay. Very
good. So if you're not hearing your event on here, it's because you haven't submitted it.
Yeah. So, and give me a call at the Arts Council, and we'll figure that out. You can still be registering for Juneau Youth Football out at Adair Kennedy Field. More information about which ones still have openings, which of the leagues are age brackets, it's 321-4012, and that's Thursday and Friday both out at Adair Kennedy. It's the last weekend to see the Disney's Beauty and the Beast and the Roald Dahl James and the Giant Peach that the star performers are doing. It's Thursday night tonight at 7:30 out at the Noise Pavilion, and the James and the Giant Peach is tomorrow. Also, the Strange Attractor Theater presents the Brand Workshop on the second stage at Perseverance. That's tonight at 7:30, and all of these things you can pay for at the door. Friday, Golden North Salmon Derby starts, and at 6 in the morning at the Douglas Boat Harbor parking lot, there's going to be a bake sale. So if you're going out fishing and you need a little something to get started, the Douglas Community United Methodist Church is baking delicious items both for Friday and Saturday morning from 6 until 10. If you're interested in starting a small business, the Alaska Small Business Development Center is holding workshops all of this week and also on Friday at 9 in the morning. It's free, I guess. It is 463-3789 to get a whole listing of all of the different workshops that they're offering. Canvas has some ceramics workshops at 10 on Friday. There is a second Friday hip-hop class at the Canvas at 4 o'clock with a suggested donation at the door, 586-1750 for more information about the Canvas things. Concerts in the park. Okay, everybody, fingers crossed that it's going to be gloriously sunny. What does the weather say?
I've got my eyes crossed.
Okay, excellent. Because we're going to have the Anjuzu Marimbas, and we want them outside in Marine Park. It's 7 o'clock, it's free, and it's going to be fabulously fun. So 586-2787 if you need more information about that. Goldtown's showing a perfect host. We have, again, James and the Giant Peach out at the Noise Pavilion at 7:30. Strange Attractor doing the brand workshop in Douglas. Kari and the Wrist Rockets are celebrating their anniversary, actually, at Louie's. It's now known as PP's Douglas Inn. It's on the 3rd Street in Douglas. Come on down at 9 o'clock. Also, Deering and Down are over at the Alaskan Bar. Saturday morning, again, 6 o'clock in the morning. Get out there for Derby with your pies and donuts and stuff. At 9 o'clock in the morning, it's the Mount Roberts Tram Run. Meet down at the tram parking lot, 463-6751 for more information. I guess the Holy Trinity is having another one of their multi-location garage sales. Out at 10 o'clock, out at the Mendenhall Glacier, meet in the bus parking lot. The Juneau Audubon Society is having a wild lichen walk. Chiska Durr is leading this. They said bring magnifying stuff if you have it. Also, at the airport mall, you were just talking to the folks about the Farmers and Crafters Market. They're going to have Roger Williams over there. This is at the Homespun Mercantile in the airport shopping center. They have their outdoor market on second Saturdays. Roger Williams is the guy that makes the fabulous spoons. His work is just amazing. So stop in out there. At 2 o'clock, you can see Disney's Beauty and the Beast by the Star Performers out at the Noyes Pavilion. Also, Sita Sings the Blues at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. At 3 o'clock, the Canvas has a special event. They are making those really long, beautiful wind socks. I think it's called Genki Nubori. This is something that Nancy Lanehart discovered or learned how to do in Japan. It is a shared project in memory of the disaster that just happened in Japan. It's a free event, 586-1750. We're making some wind socks for us and some wind socks that will go to Japan. They're also showing, let's see, Cuban night, 7 o'clock at the Latinos. There's going to be food and dance with Felix Bambori Webb. It'll be a dance demonstration, and then you'll get to be doing dancing. So, and the food's all Cuban, so that's fun.
A note on that, there's workshops going on tonight and tomorrow night as well.
Oh, excellent.
And that's Latinos.
So we can be practiced up.
See. Si.
Okay. There is going to be the Midsummer Vocal Festival concert, which is being presented by the Juno Lyric Opera. It is the Rachmaninoff Vespers. It's going to be beautiful. It's at the Northern Light United Church. You can get tickets online at Hearthside Books at the Jack or by calling the Lyric Opera. That's at 7:30 at Northern Light United Church. Again, you can see James and the Giant Peach out at the Noise Pavilion at 7:30, or you could go over and see the thing on the second stage, the brand workshop, or you can go at 9 o'clock and see Deering and Down at the Alaskan. On Sunday, it's our Sunday market from 3 until noon out on the lawn at the Jack, and it's 2 o'clock. There's the View and Chew Club. This is something... Come on, Jeff.
I like that.
It's a great name, and it's a great idea. Colette is doing this over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. She's showing trailers of different films that they're thinking of bringing, and there'll be a little food and whatnot to eat, and so you can eat and look at these trailers and sort of decide which ones the Goldtown ought to be bringing.
And speaking of Colette, she'll be helping Wayne Ward do the biscuit, the blessing of the biscuit on Telephone Hill and Sunday morning from 11 in the morning till noon.
All right, so you didn't put that on the calendar.
Well, Wayne should have done that.
Yeah, just as you said. Okay, Beauty and the Beast is, in fact, the family movie afternoon over at the Douglas Library at 3 o'clock. This is the Disney film, and there's sort of saying it's a sing-along, and there will be snacks, and it's free. That's at the Douglas Library at 3 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, it's Sunday at Savico, and again, we want it to be a beautiful day because we will have Morally Impoverished. the Hen House, and the Njuzu Marimbas. This is free, and we encourage you to bring your own lawn chairs because it's just a lawn over there. But it's, you know, fun. Bring the dogs, all that sort of stuff. At the at 7 o'clock on Sunday, it is another in the series of Juno Cabarets at the back room of the Silver Bow. This is free. They have a whole lineup. And it, actually, if you want to participate and be a singer, apparently you can go online and sign up. You can get more information about this free event, 723-7960, and talk to Laura, who's one of the divas, by the way. On Monday at 8 o'clock in the morning, Profit Mastery. This is another one of the workshops by the Small Business Development Center. 463-3789. Get more information about that. Monday is also the deadline for signing up for the applying for a 2012 solo artist exhibit at the Juno Douglas City Museum. If you're interested in doing that, 586-3572. 6 o'clock is the Capoeira workshop at the Canvas, 586-1750. I think that's a pay-as-you-can deal. Nickelodeon is showing Conan O'Brien Can't Stop. Starting on Tuesday, it is the 4-H Sustainable Harvest Camp out for ages 11 to 18. This is out at the Saga Eagle Center at Amalga Harbor. Costs $100. There are still scholarships available. If you're interested in doing this, this is all week long, 796-6281. Let's see. I think you might be coming to it here. Oh, Kung Fu Boot Camp starts over at the Temple Sukkot Shalom. This work runs Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. You can take all three lessons for $95 or $40 if you just want one lesson. If you want more information about the Kung Fu Boot Camp, I think this happened last year and it was great fun, 321-2929. We've got swing dance lessons at the Canvas at 6:30. And at 7:30, The Body, the Soul, and the Afterlife, the Kabbalistic Insights into the Nature of Death and Dying. This is also over at the Temple Sukkot Shalom, which is at 211 Cordova. $25 for this one, or there's also a workshop on Wednesday. If you take both of them, it's $40. More information on these workshops, 321-8787. At 11 o'clock on Wednesday, a really important community meeting at Marine Park to talk about the future of Marine Park. Let's think about ways that we can make it great during rain, for example. 586-0931 for more information about that. At 7:30 on Wednesday night, it's Men, Women, and the Garden of Eden over at the temple. More information on that is at 321-8787. Again, there's another workshop, Financial Projections for Your Business Plan, with the small business people. And there is the Governor's Picnic on Thursday at 4:30 over at Sandy Beach. And you were just listening to a thing saying that Peter Kenyon, all of us from Alaska who've been around for a while, recognize that voice. He will be here at, as part of the Juno World Affairs Council presentations at the JAC Thursday, 5 o'clock. That's free.
Thank you, Nancy DeGinger, for coming down here and talking about that stuff.
Thank you for having me.
It's just about 4 o'clock. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And as you know, you can also receive KTOO FM on GCI Cable Juno on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3 on a Juno afternoon, we'll talk with Byron McGilvery and Lena Simmons about the Saturday's Midsummer Vocal Festival's workshop, performance of Rachmaninoff's Vespers, and we'll also find out about a new series documenting a facet of Alaskan history with filmmakers Joan Juster and Paul Hill, and a series Where the River Matanuska Flows. That writer's Almanac Music and More today at 3 o'clock on tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a Juno afternoon. We're having some technical problems getting all things considered coming your way. We'll do that as soon as we can. And I can't even bring in music, so we'll go for a little data for the next few minutes.